And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started. Patty, after the last episode, and I just wanted to let the listeners know, you spoke about what's called, Wayne Kramer called it, the Summer of Hate, which was 1967, which was a lot like the Summer of Love, except that there was not a lot of love. There was a lot of animosity there. There was racial tension and a lot going on socially, politically, economically, a lot of clashes. And I played the Pleasure Seeker song, White Pig Blues. And I thought that was perfect because of the way you described how the cops were just all over the place when the riots broke out and how scary it was. And the anger that was permeating in the streets. And so that was the song I chose to play at the last episode, the end. And I'd love for you to talk about how that song fits in. And you told me that lyrically it's not necessarily about white pigs, which for those who don't know was a slang at the time for cops, but that there was an essence to it, and certainly the title speaks to it. So tell us a little bit about the song, and if you don't mind reading us the lyrics, please do.
Well, it was a hot time in Detroit. As I said, Wayne Kramer was, you know, his band was very involved in all that, completely into the politics. They lived in a different section of town. We were in our little Quattro bubble, but it affected us because we would jam with these guys and we were starting to write and everything. And so things would seep in, you know, as our consciousness got educated a bit. And that was a after hours bar that had been raided by the cops, and it set off a bomb in Detroit Rock City. And it was horrible.
Well, let me clarify, and then please get back to the song. They raided a bar. What kind of bar?
It was a it was an after hours bar favored by the black people, and it was one of their favorite places to go. And they didn't, you know, there was just so much tension. They raided it for some reason. They just went in there and raided it, and it just, it was like a an explosion. It sort of started the riots because a lot of stuff went on that night, and they were just furious why they came in and raided that bar. I mean, it's written up in the newspapers. It tells all about it if you want to Google it, the time they raided that bar. And the blues, the White Pig Blues, it was more like us wanting to feel like take our blues away, you know, talking to a lover, because we knew all this white pig stuff was going on and the name calling and all the animosity. And, you know, she's the person singing it is like, come and do that number with me, baby. You know, that act that drives me so crazy. She wants to be taken out of that mood of the angst going on in the city and all the violence. So it's more of a lover. Come rock those blues away. It's one of the lines, you know, could you make a little change? You know, you got me going, baby. Those white pig blues. Rock me, baby. Give it to me. Take me out of this mood. We weren't used to our city being that way. So that song is like, take us out of this mood. So that's.
Well, I love that. And also there is the play on words if it's white pig blues.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. And the vocals on it. How old was Susie when she sang the vocals on that song?
She was 14 and 64, so 17 years old. I was 19. I mean, the opening line is, I've got the blues, like anything I do is going to lose. You know, that was the feeling in the city. Yeah.
Well, we're going to definitely, this is not the end of the conversation about the Summer of Hate that was going on in Detroit, but I think it really underscores what you have been driving home, pun intended, with the Detroit car industry city, is that it really does drive home the importance of geography. And like as Wayne Kramer said, The Summer of Hate was in Detroit, Summer of Love was in California, because of the differences, and that those differences have to be noticed. And so I just really wanted to speak to this a little bit more. And again, we're going to pick this up.
Yeah, it's like the, one of the main lines in the beginning of it is, ain't nothing but the bad times, baby. And I can't go on this way. So, I mean, it does all hint toward that feeling in the city. Good song, yeah.
Oh, it's a great song. And for those who missed it, you can go listen to the last episode. We played it at the end. I absolutely love it. So one of the other things that you spoke about with now the Pleasure Seekers and the new lineup, and Arlene has joined, you said something, and it may seem offhand, but I need to understand this a little bit more. So Arlene was older. She was married to Leo Fenn, who would eventually become your manager. And she had two or three small kids, I believe.
Three kids, yep.
Kids. And you're now needing a keyboardist. Sure. And your dad, ever the entertainer, ever the showman, says out of maybe, I don't know how many choices he could have picked, why not go for Arlene? And your response was, huh? She's older, right? And that you had to hip her up. So how did this even come to your dad to push Arlene? And you said that it worked, but how did this all come about?
Well, I think, as I think I said on the last one, she would be sitting in the kitchen laughing with my mother at how we sounded learning our chops and stuff in the basement. So she was completely in a different, you know, Little Miss Housewife and all that. And we had to change her whole hairdo, get her in costume. I mean, she was wearing mother clothes and all that. I don't know what Dad was thinking. He loved the idea of a family band. I think that was part of it. He wanted to see all the girls succeed, and he saw how good we were doing and said, well, hell, Arlene plays piano great. You know, why not her? He didn't even think about the three kids. You know, he's just in his musician bubble. Let's get another member of the family in there. And that's what he did. And we were like, huh? It really took us a while to even grab onto it. I think we thought he was nuts for a minute, you know, but we didn't have another one in sight. There was nobody that we could think of. So we started thinking about it seriously. And we had long talks with her, and she decided to give it a go, but she was scared to death. You know, she didn't know if she wanted to or could do it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is was she resistant? And
I think she was a little bit, you know, like just very unsure of whether, how would I do this? I have three kids, blah, blah. They had to get a nanny. And sometimes the kids would come on the road with the nanny. Mrs. Sweet was her name. And I mean, it was not easy. And my mother became babysitter often, you know, when we would have to go on the road. Because as I said, the word of mouth started going very quickly of this hot girl group, and everybody wanted us. We started traveling more out of state and everything. So she had to have her ducks in a row. She had kids. So my mother took over a lot.
Wow.
A lot. Wow. Mom, you know, the rock.
The rock. Well, I also think in this case, it's another play on words, because word of mouth about Pleasure Seekers was that you were hot. And it's not just musically, but physically, which is another question I have for you about Arlene that you said, and it threw me for a second. You said the guys were in love with her. She was like the Pamela Sue Anderson of the day. But then you said that they had her all over MySpace. What does that mean? We didn't have MySpace back then. Do you mean social?
We had MySpace. We had MySpace. It was maybe going out, but they would put her on as their profile picture. They would pick a picture of Arlene and put it as their profile. And then, oh my God, the wording and stuff. I mean, the guys were nuts over her. She was a beautiful woman. Yeah, still is. I mean, she was the sex symbol of the group. What can I say? And after Nan left, it was Arlene all the way. And she played very sensuously. She would move her body and stuff and play the organ. And she just had a way about her that would drive the attention to her, you know, from the guys in the audience. So that was that. She was Little Miss Sex Symbol in the Pleasure Seekers.
Well, we're definitely going to be sharing some videos, but I have to say, your moves, my dear, as you're on stage in the Pleasure Seekers, those are some serious moves. The way you handle your guitar and grow, it's I think all of you are so much fun to watch and Susie bopping around, doing
her
dance moves. I think all of you are hot. Like I said, Arlene is gorgeous, but so are you, and so is Susie, and then Nancy when she comes into crayon.
That's so sweet. Well, I had a weird way of playing my guitar, and I still do. I have a hand movement that I don't think anybody else does. I sort of do this thing with my hand as I'm strumming, and I used to love to hold it up in the air and do stuff, you know, or point with it, you know, at the audience. It was just my thing. I just couldn't sit still. I just couldn't. She used to tease me. Somebody on a TV show said, after we did that Motown one in later years, they said, "Oh man, your sister goes for it just like you do." And so it made Susie laugh because we're both like that when we get on stage. We just got to do it all.
Well, I believe it was in season one that I used the word with you and your playing mesmerizing. I was referring to you and Fanny in the live video footage. But it's also the case with pleasure seekers in watching these early videos. I mean, you're just captivating. So I can't wait for the audience to hear and see all of you. And so, okay, moving on, but keeping on the theme of pleasure seekers and songs, and you're starting to write and you're starting to be a little bit more politically aware. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, and I'm just going to let you answer before I tell you my answer, but we have the same answer. No, what is I want to know if there's a certain song by the pleasure seekers, not a cover, an original song, that when you think of your time back then on the road, playing at gigs, practicing, putting yourselves out there as pretty much the first female band to have a record deal in 1966, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
What if you were going to have your one theme song to the Quattro Sisters Pleasure Seekers moment, what would be the go-to song for you?
It would have been one that really played into that feeling in Detroit from 67, 68, 69, with all that widened lens of what was it being experienced in that town with Detroit Rock City just building momentum like crazy, but still having all these conflicts going on, right? It would be Brain Confusion. Brain Confusion. Too many people, yeah, I can't get it down. Running, hiding, rolling, sneaking all over town. I gotta go. We couldn't wait to get out of town. You know, we got to leave that and start traveling. So it all tied in. We loved performing it. In another verse, all darkness seems to be so hopeless. Brain confusion. Well, I'm tired of choosing. You know, and then it's way down deep inside, I see the way my thoughts work on me, play two roles while I pretend with all the lonely people. And then it goes into this harmony thing, you know, get ready. I mean, Quattro harmony, we have that sister harmony, right? I mean, to this day, we could get together in our older age and just break into Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And we would be right on our part and sing the whole thing a cappella. That's just sister harmony. So we had that in spades, one of our fortes in that band. And so Brain Confusion had all that harmony in it. I loved it. And it had a jazzy element.
Well, before you even go on, I mean, one of the things that struck me, everything you're talking about, I want to talk more about, and we are going to be listening to it, but I want to set the stage because I was so blown away by this song. You are, again, you're 17 and 19. Susie's 17 and you're 19. Again, the song is Brain Confusion, and I want you to read more of the lyrics, but the line that really got me, this is 1966, I believe, that when you wrote this song, or 67, but you're saying all the
like right in that area, 67, 68, yeah, with all that stuff going on in Detroit.
Well, but it's an interesting parallel to the Beatles' Eleanor Rigby, Look at All the Lonely People.
Yes.
And that's... Yes. Over there in the UK, and then here you are. But it's, again, geography matters. Look at how the geography of what Detroit is going through and Brain Confusion. So the lyrics, please read a little bit more before we talk about the musical jazzy aspect.
I liked the chorus a lot because it sort of was a dichotomy about what we were feeling about getting out of the city too. It says, I said, hey, 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 people, won't you please help me get away? Got to get away. It's just all a cappella harmony from all the lonely people. That was the last line of the chorus. I loved that. And the jazz thing, I mean, you know, kudos to Wayne Kramer. He was so into the jazz element. But, you know, we were experimenting. It had a cool drum beat that started it. And it goes right in. And I love the feel of that song. We loved playing it. The people loved it. It was popular. So, yeah, it was an important song to us. Brain Confusion. Perfect title. Perfect.
Thank you.
I just still think this song, every time I listen to it, I'm just in shock and awe how musically advanced it is considering you were teenagers. Lyrically, musically, like you said, the jazzy element. I mean, this is one, I have a few songs for anybody that follows me on Facebook that I almost beg myself not to listen to because then it's on loop for the rest of the night. Mississippi right. Queen by Mountain is one of them. And now Brain Confusion by Pleasure Seekers is one of them. So I just have to, part of me can't stand it because I love it so much. It's brilliant. Yes. What were you going to say?
You know, it's interesting because when we were inducted into the Hall of Fame there, the producer of the show came up. I mean, there's these 60-year-old women that were inducted and we did Brain Confusion. And he came up to me afterwards and said, I never heard anything so sweet in any show I've done.
Wow.
Yeah. He just thought it was tremendous. And the audience loved it. So, I mean, it was a great song.
I just have this vision of your audiences just jumping up and dancing with you and having this whole moment because it is just so infectious. But again, it's just so, it's deep. There's a lot of musicality. And again, I'm just so impressed that you were teenagers as this is happening.
And we were already doing the dynamic thing that I talked about in the Fanny episodes. You know, we did, hey, people. You know, we would do what we learned vocally from our vocal teacher as young kids. All that stuff was already in there in the mix, in the Pleasure Seekers, of elements we wanted to put in to make it different and unusual. So yeah, we were in it.
Well, the other thing that I found interesting in the lyric is one of the lines you say, got to go. And that's the line that Nikki sings in Rock and Roll Survivors.
Oh, yes, yes.
You're both saying, got to go, got to go.
What else were you going to do with life going on around you and turmoil and things going on? It would seep into the lyrics, absolutely. And it meant something, you know, wherever you were, L.A., Detroit, whatever. I mean, we had our own little maelstrom going on those years in Detroit. So, yeah, it was pretty important.
Well, I would like to tease that out a little bit because you have mentioned a couple times that you lived in your Grosse Pointe bubble in the Quattro household. So it would have been almost acceptable and natural if you just did cover songs or talked about crushes on boys and things that young insulated girls want to sing about. But you were immediately drawn to tackling these larger social issues.
That was because of the homeboys. And our opportunity, I mean, I have to credit the environment that we got to hone our craft in while in the Pleasure Seekers, because we started out with that stuff in Motown and covers. But as we started jamming and doing the circuit all through Michigan and then going out, but a lot of those gigs were played with the homeboys, which I've mentioned, Amboy Dukes, Glenn Frey, Bob Seger, Alice Cooper, Iggy, you know, Ted Nugent. They were all there and we would be at the gigs and we would trade licks and play. So we were educated on a lot of musicality that we may not have gotten into staying in our little Grosse Pointe bubble. It was very lucky for us that we got to do all that learning process. And it sure served us well, I'm telling you.
Well, I would say lucky, but I also think your homeboys recognized your talents. And as you have said about Detroit, if you weren't good, it didn't matter how hot looking you were.
That's right.
So obviously, as you said, they were accepting you. Yes, you were hot looking women and they would hit on you, but they also really respected your musical talents and brought into that fold.
Yeah, we jammed with all of them, you know, and C5 too. I mean, we played so many gigs with them. And then we furthered that widening of the lens by going to the clubs and learning about stuff. The Blues Magoos were incredibly popular at that time, and they played at this little local club, the Chessmate. And we were down there every damn night, hanging out and jamming and stuff. And it was their gig, but we would show up. So, you know, even people coming into Detroit helped with that education because we were able to pick up a lot of stuff musically. So, and we were ready for it. We had been trained by my dad. I mean, you know, he had given us the lessons and everything, and we were ready to explode. So it was very cool time.
Well, I also think not only your dad, but I want to touch upon your brother, Michael Quattro. But I think that this is the perfect way for us to end this episode so that we can talk about him in more depth, because it started with your dad, Arthur. Absolutely, he set the stage. He had a band, a trio. He booked the gigs. He supported his five children, one of them only being a boy, but he treated the girls equally, saying, learn music. He supported you. Susie was playing bongos with him at the age of 7. By the age of 16, you have this epiphany at a Beatles concert. But your brother was really foundational for you, as well as your dad. And so I think that it's all but deserving, and only deserving, that Michael gets the next couple episodes at least. So until then.